friends and family and visitors from the community and people from out of town. It is just a joy to be with you. Just a couple of things as we get started. One of them, we have a note that we shared on Wednesday evening from the McCauley family that Mike and Mary have some friends in Kent, and here's one sister in Christ that has just been through the ringer, that she had a knee replaced and that helped her out with that. And come to find out, the painkiller helping her cope with the knee replacement kind of thing masked the pain from cancer. And she's discovered to have cancer, and so they're going to be helping her. And they said, so sometimes they'll be here, sometimes they'll be over there. Mike, we're going to love you guys, whether you're here or there, and whatever we can do to be an encouragement. They had just expressed their love both here and wanted to be servants there as well. So we wanted to share in that. One other thing is that we had mentioned last week, the Alexanders had really two deaths in the families. John's health is nip and tuck. And so it really was better for them to move congregationally to a congregation in Seattle. And so what we wanted to do was, we have just little different cards that a number of people have filled out. And just to say, hey, we're thinking about you, love, miss you, scripture things. So a number have. Let me just say, we have a few cards left. Is anybody interested? If we have somebody pass them out, would anybody has a spot where say, I'd like to write them a note? Raise your hand, and if so, we'll send them along. And if not, then we got. So once you do this, I got four here. So if somebody raise their hand, you can hand them one. And if you need some more, we got some in the in the lobby out there. And so glad to do that. And this morning's lesson, what we're going to do is we're going to be looking at Nehemiah chapter 3 and chapter 4. And in that situation, what happens is there's power in unity. There's always power in unity. And as we get toward the end of the lesson, we're going to find out what happens when we get frustrated and we need some patience in unity, because sometimes we just get hammered and we get frustrated, we get angry, and what do you do then? And so we're going to be dealing with some of those principles this morning. And so I just have in this graphic here is a herd of water buffalo, and the lions were on the attack. That is, they were on the attack unless the water buffalo stick together, and then the lions scatter. And what lions try to do with water buffalo, wildebeest, something like that, and wolves do the same in hunting herd animals, that they don't do well if, like in this case, the water buffaloes have all the horns pointing outward and the little ones in the center where they're protecting them. And if they stick together, I mean, the lions cannot break in. And so what happens is they try to scare them, they try to startle them and get the herd scattering. And so if some one of them is weak or old or young, it'll break off. So think about that in Colossians chapter 3 and down in verse 14. He said, put on love, which is the perfect bond of unity. We do a lot better with a family, with a congregation, or with a country if we really love each other and we've got a purpose, we've got a focus, and we're headed in the right way. But sometimes we lose our focus. We get distracted by the wrong things. I like this. There was a quote from that apparently is an Australian Aboriginal proverb. So here's somebody other side of the world, and they just have a good attitude. They said, we are all visitors to this time, this place. We are just passing through. Our purpose here is to observe, to learn, to grow, to love. And then we return home. Well, I like that. That kind of summarizes it, doesn't it? What happens is, sometimes, yeah, I'm here to get this job done and I'm irritated like all get out because it's not working right, or I want to
this kid to help and they're not doing it, or this is supposed to work out and it worked out just opposite of the way, and we're frustrated, and these different elements come together. And so one of the things, if we said, look, I've got a focus, here's my focus, and I was talking to somebody this past week, it came up a couple of times. One of the things that helps and helps me is if we have the 100-year view, whatever we're focused on, you know, it's kind of the hammering of the instant. The doorbell's ringing, the phone's going off, the washing machine's overflowing, bills, what all the pressures are. Let me ask you this. Will it matter in 100 years? And most of the stuff, no, it just doesn't matter. Well, I missed a phone call. Oh, I was supposed to go to the... It just happens. And once we have that more balanced attitude, our aspect is we want to grow in Christ. We want to grow together to be like Christ. And really, it helps to have a unified attitude. And the believers here do. And so what we're going to do is look at the common joy and the common power. And then we're going to look at some of the common frustrations and what to do about something like that. In Nehemiah chapter 2 and down in verse 17, here's what happened. God's people had been in the land of Palestine, taken into captivity, some into northern, from northern area of Israel into Assyria, and then southern Judah into Babylonian captivity. 70 years later, the politics changed and the Jews were released, and many of them from Babylonian captivity and just a few from Assyrian that were left over decided, we're going to return. Because in the process, our city's been torn down. Nehemiah, who is an important official in the Persian government, hears about how bad it is. He prays, he asks the king, I want to go back and build, and the king allows him. So Nehemiah 2:17, he said, let us rebuild the wall of Jerusalem, and the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we'll arise and build. Once you've got a goal, once you've got a focus, here's what we can do. Here's what we need to do. We personally can be better. We can grow more. A number of our people had to move away, and I don't mean just kind of down the street. Wyoming and Atlanta, Georgia, and Hermiston, Oregon, and Spokane, Washington, and Phoenix, Arizona. I mean, all over the place. So what's our mission? Our mission is to reach the community just like it always was. And what we find in Acts chapter 8, there was a great persecution that came upon the church at that time, and they were all scattered. You had thousands of Christians in Jerusalem. They're all scattered except the apostles. Well, guess what? Now we're down to 12 again. And so what do? You just keep working and growing and building. And so here was their goal. We've got a city that they had been living in for maybe 90 years, and the wall was all torn down. It was just disgusting and ugly, and they needed to rebuild, but everybody was busy with their own stuff. And so what we're going to look at, and the purpose for this graphic, in the time of David, this was kind of the main part of the city. Here's Mount Zion. And then through the various decades and centuries, they would continue to expand the city. And what we're going to look at is various people that were willing to accept a role in helping rebuild the wall. And they kind of rebuilt it in their area. And the reason I have this is we're going to start. And notice all the way around here is it's going to be in a counterclockwise. We're going to look at Nehemiah 3:1, start at the sheep gate. You don't have to memorize this, but at least you know what is happening. It'll mention sheep gate and fish gate and old gate, and you're moving counterclockwise. And then it'll come down to the valley gate and the dung or refuse gate and the fountain gate. And here's all these different areas and the walls in between. The reason I say that, as we read a little bit of the text, we go, man, I'm getting lost. It was this gate. It doesn't really matter where the gate is. You just realize somebody said, okay, I'll take this spot, and I'll take the next one, and I'll take the one following that. And so they did that all the way around up to the top again. And so in Nehemiah chapter 3 and in verse 1, Eliashib, the high priest rose up with his brethren, the priests, and built the sheep gate. So here's in the very north end. He said, oh yeah, the high priest said, we don't do that. I have an instructor, and he knows I'm a preacher, and he's from an Asian background, and so he needed some help, so I just helped him on the building we're in. They just needed some minor carpentry work, and I can do that. And he was surprised at it, because that wasn't his background, and the people he knows, the religious leaders, don't do any of that. That they don't do anything is, okay, you're going to drive and you're going to work and you're going to, and they're just, you know, in a high position. And so they don't do the work. And he was kind of surprised. You do that. I said, oh, yeah, we can build and shovel and do whatever is needed. The thing that I wanted to point out, Eliashib, the high priest, that he got busy. Yeah, but you're the high priest. Yeah, he got busy with the brethren, the priests, and built the sheep gate. And so as you think about that, say, what is my position? My position is I'm a servant of the king. Whatever the king needs, I'm willing to do. He wasn't too spiritual for hard work. If you're a leader in whatever industry you are, you set the example. If you're a mom or a dad in the home, you set the example. You are the one showing that next generation, here's how it's done. And that's what Paul told Timothy to do in 1 Timothy 4:12. In Nehemiah 3 and verse 1, they built the sheep gate and they consecrated it. That is, that's a gate. People bring their sheep in for sacrifice. What's the big deal? The big deal is it belongs to God. You belong to God. I belong to God. And the work that we do, we're doing in service to God. And so here's the sheep gate in the north. So, all right, you can't do it all. I can't do it all, but I can do a part of it. So, all right, sign me up, and I'll do the part that I can do. And verse 2, and next to Eliashib, the men of Jericho built. Wait a minute, Jericho? You don't even live in Jerusalem. They said, sign me up. I'm willing to get to work. Is that your attitude? Well, I live in Tacoma. I don't live in Tacoma. We're here at work to serve the Lord in Tacoma. And every man's work is important. Even though these individuals, their work on a gate, maybe they're just doing part of the wall. Yeah, but I didn't do the gate. Gates aren't much good if you don't have a wall connecting them. And these guys didn't live there, but they said, we're willing to serve. Does that represent your attitude? You say, I want to be consecrated. I want to be set apart for God's work. I don't have to do the most important or the most obvious part. I'm just willing to do my part. And Jericho was part of the restored in Judea. Jericho was 15 miles away, and they came. It's kind of surprising. There's just a handful of us that live real close here in Tacoma. Everybody else, we kind of at varying degrees out, but we're willing to be here and serve here and love one another here. And then Nehemiah chapter 3 and verse 3, and the sons of Hazaniah built the fish gate. So here's the next one over counterclockwise. And they laid its beams and its doors and bolts and bars. So here's north, northwest. And I suppose that's because, well, you might bring fish in, whether from the Mediterranean or more likely from Lake Galilee, which was some miles to the north. And so that's usually where the fish dealers came in. And so if we think about, we're here, and it says the sons of Hazaniah. These are brothers, a band of brothers. Psalm 133 and verse 1, how good, how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. You may have been in congregations sometimes where, whew, man, they have problems there. This one doesn't like that one. And man, even families are that way if it's really tumultuous. But I like to be in a family that's peaceful, that's growing, that has purpose. We've got vision, and we're here just to help and serve one another. And then it mentions some like Meremoth, Meshallam, Zadok, and the Tekoites made repairs to the walls. So sometimes it's just a family. Sometimes it's family and friends. family and people that are willing to serve. They made repairs, and the Hebrew word means it's strengthened. Think about it. That's what elders' job is to do for a congregation. Our job is to watch over lambs. Do you have what you need to be better, to do better? It's not one of glory, like in the one where this Asian instructor is from, where there is, man, the religious leaders are there. You don't even drive your own car. I thought, well, you know, we could talk about that if we could put it in a budget. We would like a helicopter to drive. No, I'm just kidding about that. Why, we're just servants of the King. Everybody, we're just working shoulder to shoulder to strengthen one another, to make ourselves strong and to live for Jesus, to serve Him outside of the gathering. We're here, we get strength from being together, and then we go out to serve Him wherever we are. And then look at this. This caught my attention in verse 8. Uziel, one of the goldsmiths. Wait a minute, but this guy is in the arts. He said, that's right. But he had a place in the kingdom as well. Alongside him was Hananiah, one of the perfumers. So you got industries where you got jewelry makers and perfume makers. Well, I don't do that. Oh yeah, they did. They said, all right, you know, give me my work apron and give me so many bricks. And my attitude when I work with the crew, you just tell me what you like me to do. If you want me to run and go get the stuff, if you want me to carry the bundles of shingles up on my shoulder, I'll put them there. If you want me to dig the ditch, I'll do that. Because we have individuals here that have a great background in the trades. I've done a lot of them, but it's like one summer I did this, one summer I did that. I did just enough to give, something like that. But you guys know what's going on, so I'm glad to help. I'm glad to serve. And that's what all our attitudes need to be. They were just not professional buildings, but they were absolutely willing. There was a guy named Viggo Olson who helped rebuild 10,000 houses in war-ravaged Bangladesh in 1972. He derived unexpected inspiration from reading this chapter, which said, I was struck that no expert builders were listed in the Holy Land Brigade. There were priests, there were goldsmiths, perfume makers, women, but no expert builders and carpenters were named. And so in his own country, when devastation hit, he said, boy, if they can do that in the Bible, I can do that where I live. And that's what happened here. The most important ability in the work of the Lord is availability. Are you available? Are you willing to serve? Man, yeah, but my schedule is, all our schedules are like that, and they're always like that. We think, man, if I could just get the kids out of diapers. Oh, yeah, then you got them in school, and you're running them to the dentist and running them to the sports thing. Yeah, but when I get out of high school, well, then there's college, and then you get married, and then there's kids and cars and grass and dog and all those things. Well, when I retire. Well, then when you retire, your face clears up and your mind goes fuzzy. I mean, there's always one thing after another. There's no perfect time except right now is the time. Well, Paul, I would do it, but see, I got a bad past. Just this morning, I was handed a note from a Christian. I don't know where they got this, but it is just great. He said, you can't alter your past. Is that a true statement? The answer is, yeah, absolutely. But you can bring your past to the altar. God, I can't change who I was and what I did. It just is. All you have right now is who I am and my willingness to serve. I thought you'd like that. You can't alter your past, but you can bring your past to the altar. Are you available? Next to him was Raphia, the son of Hur, the leader of half the district of Jerusalem. So now here you are in a political family. But he's just another leader who knew real
leadership means getting your hands dirty. You get in there and help get the job done. Greatness means you be a servant. That's what Jesus said in Matthew 23:11. The greatest of all is the servant of all, not expecting others to serve you. Jediah made repairs opposite his house. And so five times in Nehemiah chapter 3, it talks about individuals who worked on this section right in front of their house. You say, how can I get busy? Right in your community, right with your relative, right with your friends. You just invite them, whatever you, hey, come on, have you got time? Hey, we'd like you to come over and do the blah. Grand, I'd love to do it. But really my commitment, I'm going to be at church from this time to that time. And what about right afterward? You just invite them. They don't have to come. You're just welcoming them to the family of God. Sometimes folks are excited about the work of God someplace else. Oh man, we got a great work out here in northern Argentina or something, way over there. But they neglect what the opportunities are in their own backyard. Malchijah, the son of Haram, repaired another section and the tower of the furnaces. Ezra 10:31 says, this man was confronted by Ezra for the sin many years before. Now, what's interesting there is just because we failed at some time in our life doesn't mean we need to stay a failure. We have the opportunity to serve, to do better than we did last week, last year, or 10 years ago. We're in the family of God. God, I'm just willing to serve. Whatever it is you'd like me to do. He made things right with God. A believer should never let us pass fail or get in the way of presently serving God. Because sometimes we get down, yeah, but you don't know what I did. Nobody knows what anybody did. And it's always a mess. Just set it right and get on serving God. Because that's what, you know, Peter was interested in. What's going to happen to John? Don't worry about John. If you're exercising, I was exercising a few weeks ago and got hurt. Yeah, but this new guy in is going to be ahead of me. Who cares, Paul? You're not competing with other people. You're competing against yourself. Are you doing better this week than you did last? This month than last month? In 312, Shalom, the official of half the district of Jerusalem, made repairs. He and his daughters. Oh, man, this guy doesn't have a whole table full of sons, but he's got daughters. So guess what, women? There is women power. You can do certain things, even in the contracting area, whether measurements or read the blueprints or relay messages, spread the mortar or whatever it is. I was helping some Christians, it's been, 10 years ago now, and it impressed me as I went over, they needed their house and their property worked on, and just was a whole passel of Christians went over, different congregations helping them. And I'm there, just whatever you need me to do, you need me to build or paint or whatever it is. And here's a Christian woman with a DeWalt screw gun. And I thought, whoa, look at that. And she knows what it's about. And she's putting up the fireplace surround. I thought, blew me away. I said, good for you. I need to get myself a DeWalt screw gun and get to work. And so you can do those things that are within the area for you to do. Another way for a leader and his family is, hey, this is what we got. We have committed women, and not everyone can help in the same way. But 2 Corinthians 8:12 said, it's acceptable as a man has, not what he does not have. What can you do to serve? How can you help out, help this little congregation grow and encourage believers? 3:13, Hanun and the inhabitants of Zenoa repaired the valley gate. So now here is down in the southwest sector. They built it and hung the doors, bolts and bars, and repaired 1,000 cubits, 1,500 feet of wall, as far as the refuge gate. Wow. Yeah, but now we start looking. Look what they did. Well, some go faster. Some can do more, stay on the job longer. You just do what you can do. Isn't that true? We're all saved by grace.
And we're not saved by works. Hey, I tell you what, I've put up 100 board feet of this and that. That's not the big deal. The big deal is you're willing to help. You're willing to join the effort. And Shemaiah, the keeper of the east gate. So obviously this is the gate facing east, carried out repair. So that would be the side looking toward the Mount of Olives. And 332, and between the upper room of the corner and the sheep gate on the north, so you've turned the corner going from the east around toward the north, the goldsmiths and the merchants carried out repairs. Again, not professional builders. The enthusiasm begins enthusiasm. So you just encourage others. I'm willing, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And when Sanballat heard that we were rebuilding the wall, he became furious and very angry and mocked the Jews. Jim Hester, this thing I've saved over the years, mentioned it a half a dozen times. The loudest boos come from the cheap seats, right? They didn't pay as much. They get it. Hey, I'm sitting up in the bleachers. Boo, I don't like how the quarterback did this or that. And it just, well, you're not in the game. You paid $4 for a seat, and now you're fussing about how these individuals are responding. The reality is, and a quote I mentioned several years ago was Teddy Roosevelt in The Man in the Arena. It's not the critic that counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who's actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly and errs, who comes short again and again because there's no effort without error and shortcoming. But who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, and who at best knows in the end the triumph of high achievement, and who at worst, if he fails, fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat. You just get in the fight. You do the very best you can. But what happens is almost always there's some kind of opposition. Stuff doesn't go very well, this or that. And I just wanted to share some things. What do you do when you try, and it's just frustrating? And we get angry about it, and we lose our patience. Well, I want to share just a half a dozen quick notes. Number one, commit to anger management. I'm just not going to let my anger manage me. In Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 9 said, anger rests in the bosom of fools. If I do, well, that's just the way I am, I'm giving myself permission. They say, stop it. Yeah, but stop it. I'm not giving myself permission to react that way. In James 1, 19 through 20, let every man be quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. All right, I'm going to work on that. I want to be patient. And then model patient people. Proverbs 22, verses 24 and 25, do not associate with an angry man, lest you learn his ways. And so think about who's your model. And I mention all the time, Rocky's my model for that, and I'm serious about that. He's the calmest person I have ever known. And that's good for me. And he said, well, Paul, you encourage me. And so really, you really help one another have balance. And so you think that's how they face frustrations. How do they handle that? And we've through the years that, Rocky, how you doing? I said, well, I decided to work on it. And that's not the kind of, you know, I just didn't want to be an angry or excitable person. The other thing, number three, so you commit to growing. You model patient people. And number three, appreciate you create your own anger. Oh, no, Paul, no, it's not me. This person over here is my neighbor is what makes me angry. No. You make yourself totally angry. In Proverbs 4 and verse 23, talks about that. that you need to look at your own heart. You need to watch over your own heart, because out of it flow the springs of life. And so if there's a bunch of noise outside, you say, boy, that'd make anybody angry. Really? It's just a state of mind. What if you are the foreman and they're the carpenters getting the job done? Oh, you're happy to hear the noise because it means something else to you. We apply meaning to things. And we don't mind people yelling. We don't mind people screaming. Well, I would at 2 o'clock in the morning if you're trying to sleep. Not if it's your family and there's a fire. Oh, yeah, that's different. That's right. It's the meaning that we attach to things. So the third thing is realize we create our own disposition of anger. It's not forced on us. It's the interpretation we put on things. Number four, appreciate this. God is always trying to mold you. Wait a minute, I don't need the molding. The other person needs to be molded. God said, yeah, well, maybe so, but so do you. Isaiah 64 and in verse 8. He is the potter and we are the clay. We always need to be molded. We need our attitude revised, updated. It's kind of like our computer programs. It's always needs some work on it and to get it better. Number five is appreciate this. The other person may be a babe, either chronologically, they're just a little kid and they don't get it. Emotionally, intellectually, they don't get it. And so Jesus talked about us being thoughtful and watching so we don't offend the little ones, Matthew 18 and verse 6. Because you know what happens is, if you're like me, it's my time, my expectation, and it ain't happening. So I don't care if it's a stoplight. I wanted to get through the stoplight because I wanted to get here at this time, or I wanted when I asked the caller to do this or that, it worked out the different way or they weren't available. You say, it's all God's time. God, this is the way you wanted it. And I'm okay with how you want it. It doesn't have to be my time, my expectation, and my way. It's God's way. And I'm going to live with that. So now, since that didn't happen, you know how when you're raising up little kids, how it is, you want them to look perfect and go, and you get them out the door, and they got one tennis shoe on and one sock's missing and the other one's the wrong this or that, and it's not working out. I'm time pressed and schedule and expectation, and let me ask you this, is it going to matter in 100 years? And you say, no, it doesn't actually matter right now. And so as you go through life, your attitude is one where, like Jesus said in Luke chapter 10, verse 40 through 42, he was there at the house of Mary and Martha. Martha's trying to fix dinner, and Mary's listening to him, and Martha says, Jesus, will you bid my sister? I'm getting it all, doing all the work myself. And he says, Martha, Martha, you are worried and busy about many things. There's only a few things necessary, really only one. Out of all of life, all the stuff we could be fretful about, spirituality, getting ourselves and one another to heaven. That's the big deal. Everything else is, somewhere further down in the list. And so here is Nehemiah. Here are the people trying to do a good thing and problems. Didn't let them blow them away. And so the Nehemiah challenge is rebuilding the wall on our knees. Nehemiah 4:4, he said, hear, O God, how we are despised. So we built the wall, and the whole wall was joined together to half its height, for the people had a mind to work. We're here just to serve. How can we bless one another? How can we encourage one another? In 4:13, so he said, I stationed men in the lowest parts of the space and behind the wall in the exposed places, and I stationed people in families and swords and spears and bows. And when I saw their fear, I
rose and spoke to the people and said, do not be afraid of them. Remember the Lord who is great and awesome. And fight for your brothers, your sons, your daughters, your wives, and your houses. The reality is we're always in a battle. We're here to serve God. And sometimes there are challenges. And I think, well, how am I going to handle that? Well, I'm going to handle that one challenge at a time. I'm just not going to let it blow me away. And so in 4:17, it happened when our enemies heard that it was known to us and that God had frustrated their plan. Then all of us returned to the wall and each one to his work. And it came about from that day on, half of my servants carried on the work while half of them, the bows and breastplates of the and the captains were behind the whole house of Judah. Those who were rebuilding the wall and those who carried the burdens took their load with one hand and doing the work and the other hand holding weapons. So, all right, man, one hand, man, we got a sword and the other hand, I got a trowel. And so we got a job to do. We're just not going to let the enemy beat us down because there's power in unity. We're here together to serve the Lord and serve one another. And in the meantime, there's distractions and frustrations and reversals. Well, that's always a part of life. And so we're growing and doing the very best we can. We're so glad you're here this morning. Every person carries a really heavy burden. And we'd be honored to help you any way we can. If you're here this morning, you say, I'd like to be baptized in Christ. I've never been immersed for the remission of my sins. You'd like to do that? We can do that this morning. If you'd like to come forward and say, I'd like the prayers of the congregation, that I'm struggling with some heavy things, we can do that. If you just want us to love you and hug you, and we'll do that as well. Any way we can help, let us know as we're standing and singing our invitation song.